So the last several days I've been emphasizing the freeing the mind from the hindrances and of course that's a really important focus because as long as the hindrances are not in abeyance, then it's very difficult to settle the mind and allow the mind to become clear. At the same time, we also need to be paying attention to our meditation object and clarifying and cultivating that consistency of awareness where we're able to hold the meditation object skillfully and being able to approach the establishing of awareness so that the mind is able to take an interest. There's a discourse where the Buddha uses a simile of the king's cook, that a skillful, wise cook who's in the employ of the king will pay attention to what the king what kind of food he likes, whether the king likes spicy or bland, or whether he likes whether he likes it piping hot, or what temperature he likes it at, whether he likes it at wants the kind of sweeter foods or sour foods or salty or however the king prefers his food, then the cook has to pay attention to what those preferences are, and when that cook pays attention and is able to discern the preferences of the king, then he'd be able to serve the king those foods, and king would inevitably give some kind of a reward to that cook, and that cook would be able to live comfortably. And similarly, I'd say a meditator needs to pay attention to the preferences of the mind, the needs of the mind, what the mind requires in order to take an interest, sustain interest, have in order to engage in the meditation, as the without really paying attention in that way, then the mind isn't able to engage. But when it is, then of course there is the reward of clarity and peacefulness and the ability of the mind to settle and concentrate. So that to pay attention to what the mind needs and what the mind is interested in, and to be able to engage the oneself in the application of attention in a way that the mind is either challenged or pleased by or something that it's able to engage fully in the meditation, so that as we practice, then it's not just trying to fulfill some ideal or idea that we have that we think we should be doing, but to be recognizing what actually works. So with the practice, that applying of attention, and that's a really essential part of developing our meditation and our concentration. There's another discourse where the Buddha talks of the, say, fivefold right concentration, and of course he goes through the four jhanas as which is an ordinary and expected way of describing right concentration. But then the fifth factor of fivefold right concentration is that the meditator has the theme of the meditation well in hand, well attended to, well applied, with discernment. So that this aspect of right concentration is oftentimes not focused on or not talked about very much, but it's a really important aspect of that one's theme of meditation is picked up and tuning into the theme or the object of meditation, applying the mind to it, attending to it, reflecting, engaging the appropriate kind of either intensity or relaxation that one applies to it. Otherwise, the mind either becomes kind of inured or kind of slack or it's too intense, too tense, too kind of fraught in trying too hard sometimes, so that necessity of balancing the way we approach the meditation theme and object, so that there's an appropriate engagement, and of course that's where we need to be able to attend to the results. What's the appropriate result? There needs to be kind of mindfulness and awareness. There needs to be a certain brightness and energy there. There needs to be a sense of peace and tranquility. There needs to be a relaxing and settling. So all of these things need to be attended to and cultivated. It's not some magical result that miraculously appears when you finally get your samadhis. It's a skill that one is developing and cultivating right from the initial sitting down, putting your legs in the cross-legged position, sitting on your meditation cushion, your bench or your chair, all of the different ways that we begin our meditation, and right from the get-go, adjusting and observing. What's the proper balance in the posture? How do I engage the body when I sit down? Just that getting that balance of posture, so that one isn't slumping and one isn't too tense. If you're sitting on the floor, getting a solid posture so that the knees are touching the cushion. There's a good solid base. The base of the spine. There's a slight arch there so that you're lifting up from the pelvis, and you're able to sit with the spine nice and erect, sitting with the shoulders somewhat back a bit, not sort of slump forward. As soon as if they're slumped forward, then everything's going to keep going forward. So that the neck is rising from the shoulders, so that the head is tilted slightly forward. And that's a nice balanced posture, isn't it? It doesn't have to be ramrod straight, but if it's slumping at all, then that's what tends to. One tends to just keep slumping, and it's hard to actually sit for a long period of time without that balanced posture. If you're leaning or you're too tense, and that's where you'll start to get kind of cramps and pains. And oftentimes people complain that, well, I sit in meditation, I've got pains in my back. And oftentimes the pain in the back is just sometimes the posture just isn't balanced. There's not a nice kind of evenness of relaxing and relying on the posture, the skeletal structure of the body to prop you up. You're trying to hold the body up with muscle power, and that's when there's not a nice balance in the posture. Then oftentimes having to hold the posture through the musculature rather than through the actual structure of the body. So that paying attention to that, it's part of the meditation object or the theme of contemplation, how to how to get it, how to sit with the body upright and alert. And paying attention to the breath as it comes in, and paying attention to the breath as it goes out. It's the establishing awareness at the at a particular point. It doesn't be at the tip of the nose or at the say the back of the throat, the abdomen, chest area. It doesn't really matter so much, but the main thing is that one is picking a point, a place of experiencing the sensation of the breath, and recognizing that just that simple rhythm of the breath as it comes in, the breath as it goes out, and having that degree of attention and awareness, one is observing the experience of breath. It isn't as if one is trying to regulate the breath or trying to control the breath, but one is experiencing and observing the natural rhythm of the breath, that the breath comes in, the breath goes out. The breath arises, the breath passes away, the breath expands, the breath contracts. I mean, these are kind of natural and universal rhythms, so that it's not about me watching my breath, me trying to have my perfect breath. It's just this the recognition of this rhythm of the rhythm of the body, the rhythm of nature. And that when one casts it in that light, then one's already starting to have the, say, a different perspective. If the meditation is about me trying to get the perfect breath or get the perfect mindfulness to that particular breath, then it's going to be fraught with difficulty and problems and hindrances, because it's that kind of me is central. But when you're taking the step back and then allowing attention to be directed towards these natural rhythms, nature playing itself out. That's one of the things that in terms of meditation, where people get either tired, wear themselves out, or get bound up in all the sort of difficulties, problems, or striving for success and satisfaction with success. It's all around me trying to be the meditator. And as long as it's around one's efforts are rooted in that kind of fundamental I position, me position, me and my meditation, then it's always going to be complicated. It's always going to be difficult. To begin with that fundamental attention to these rhythms of nature, this the fundamental rhythm of the breath coming in, the breath going out, the expansion and contraction, which is how the the Buddha goes up to the universes, the universe, world system expanding and contracting, and that's what happens. And all beings are actually their life force is dependent on this, just these subtle expansions and contractions. As you realize, well, it's all it is this life force playing itself out, and to be able to attend to that in that way changes our relationship to the meditation, how we approach it, and the results that we get. There's a certain peacefulness that comes just by stepping back from that self investment of me trying to achieve some sort of goal in my meditation. That's actually a huge step forward. To be able to take that rhythm of the breath and to start to attend to it, the sensations that one experiences, and to start to recognize how one experiences the breath. Is it smooth? Is it a bit rough? Are they long breaths? Are they short breaths? What's associated with a long breath or a short breath? Sometimes we should be trying to have these long, smooth breathing so that everything will become peaceful. But in reality, sometimes when the mind becomes very peaceful, the body becomes very relaxed, sometimes it's actually very short breathing. And it's just you realize that the body doesn't need the same amount of oxygen, or it doesn't need the same amount of breathing to sustain itself. We expend huge amounts of energy with our thinking and our proliferating and our worrying and our projections, and allowing things to really settle, allowing the body to settle, allowing the mind to settle. So that paying attention to that rhythm of the breath, paying attention to the clarifying the sensation of the breath, taking an interest in it. And one doesn't need sometimes sometimes we have too much kind of knowledge and literal assumptions that we should be, when we start paying attention to the breath, then we start trying to have breathing in some kind of anatomically correct fashion. And all, as you remember the pictures or images of the body and the nose and the lungs and the diaphragm, and you try to get it all lined up. But in meditation, all you're trying to do is pay attention to the experience of the breath. How does one experience it? What is the experience? What's the texture of that experience? What's it feel like? Or what imagery comes up when one is attending to the breath? I can remember times of sitting in meditation and the meditation object actually feeling sort of outside the body, and then the immediate kind of it's a bit disconcerting. So then really trying to line it all up according to logic, but that's not in terms of meditation, it's not so useful. What's more useful is to pay attention to the experience. What is the in that third step of Anapanasati, and experiencing the whole body I breathe in, experiencing the whole body I breathe out, and that word that the Buddha uses of translating as experience is really important. Patisamveti, these are fully experiencing, fully feeling and attending to the experience, say, as opposed to because sometimes there's a, you know, it's easy to slip into the idiom of meditation and meditation instruction, like watching the breath, which, you know, sometimes valid, but it also sets up a very different relationship, so that sort of me watching something else, me inside here looking at something outside, or me, this is a sort of that. There's a certain separation that we establish in the mind when we think of that watching, and that as opposed to experiencing the breath, experiencing the body, experiencing the sensation, experiencing that rhythm of the breath, so that moving into the experience, inhabiting the experience within the meditation. Let's say it changes the relationship, so that to engage in that process of practice and engage in the process of the establishing of meditation, the establishing of awareness. One has to engage and inhabit the experience, it's something that you're doing already. I mean, you're breathing already. So learning how to engage and to inhabit that experience of the breath, and as one pays attention to, yeah, to what works and what doesn't work, pays attention to what the mind takes interest in and what it's not so interested in, then that's when the you know, that alertness and awakeness starts to kick in. So that too. Take this opportunity to explore how to develop this meditation, how to be able to allow the meditation to be something that is not so much as a chore or a task or duty, but something that one really enjoys. Because that's so often we end up relating to the meditation as just something that we do or feel we should be doing. But to take an interest and to be able to enjoy the meditation, and to do that one has to fully experience it. So just to work with these themes.